You are listening to Grandpa Lampshade.
It is not just a show, it is the show, and that is right, the show is back once again this week. It is the Church of the Lampshade Show. As always, your one and only host, the ever humble Grandpa Lampshade. Glad you could join us this week. I think, as always, I think we're going to have a great show. I think we'll have a fun discussion. Anybody that's new tuning in, we kind of do things a little different here. We've got listener feedback. We've got just a general discussion. And what really sets us apart is we have a Christian specific message later in the show, kind of the highlight of the show. I think it's what most people look forward to. And I can guarantee you, if you're a Christian believer, you've never heard a sermon quite like the sermons you get here at the Church of the Lampshade. But there's just so much more. We pack so much into this show, and it's a good time for one and all. I know it's a good time for me, and apparently we do seem to have somewhat of a loyal following, so somebody's getting something out of it. It's always good to hear. So yeah, we always appreciate those who aren't shy, pay their tithes, and if you want to be a part of that, it's at the bottom of the description page. We got snail mail, we got Bitcoin. If you have another cryptocurrency, drop me an email. That's down there as well. I'll do my best to get you wallet address for that as well. I'm pretty sure the post office stacked my mail once again this week. We have three humble Lampshade supporters out of our vast congregation, which means next week they'll get caught up and dump all the mail in there. So yeah, you know, it's just the way it works. So yeah, it is much appreciated. So we'll get through the mailbag real quick. It won't take long because I have one note here. Mr. T, yours came through this week. Yours didn't get stacked. So congratulations, GPL. We do live in interesting times, do we not? God bless, Mr. T. And we do, in the Chinese proverbial sense. It's like we've been cursed. May you live in interesting times. Well, they are indeed interesting. No two ways about that. So again, thank you, Mr. T. Thank you to our Bitcoin senders there. It is very much appreciated. And those of you who've probably already sent something, you're like, why didn't I get there? Don't freak out. I'm sure, like I say, Monday, it'll all be stacked in there deep. That's generally the way it works. So yeah, again, don't tap the bottom of the offering plate. Put your tithes in there. It makes a difference in a humble lampshade's life. So with that out of the way, look here. We're only 2 minutes into the show. Normally, we go through the listener supporter mailbag, and I'm able to milk 15, 20 minutes out of that at least. And we're like 2 minutes into this thing. We're already done. We're already going on in to the rest of the show. It is the 88th installment of the Church The Church of the Lampshade Show. I could just, yes, it's just, you could just feel the energy. And yeah, as far as this week's, what I figured we'd kick off discussing, last Friday, of course, I'm on Fridays, so do the Daily Nationalist, myself, Sven Longshanks, and always fun time. And on last Friday's show, I touched on this. We touched on this Hunter Biden story about the computer. And you want to catch that. But I alluded at that time that I'd probably go into this a little more on the show this week. And we're going to do that. And not so much necessarily the details. I was thinking about how I wanted to approach this. And I thought really, as I thought about it, because we tend to think about things here on this show in a bigger picture context. So you'll see what I mean as we rock along. But as you know, we had this whole story about the Hunter Biden thing. And I just have this hunch, and I may be completely wrong. I mean, I was sitting here saying there's no way they were going to let Biden debate, but apparently they found a drug cocktail that'd keep him cognizant long enough to where he could do that. But so I was wrong on that. And I may be wrong on this, but I just feel like there's way more in play here with this Hunter Biden computer story. This notion of a computer repairman, I think that's all kind of a front. I mean, somehow this information winds up in Rudy Giuliani's hands. I really think, you know, and I'm not a Q person, but, you know, it's kind of Q-tier here. I think that this was a larger operation, and I think they have more information off this computer than simply Hunter Biden laying there in bed with a crack pipe. And as a part of this, I found it interesting how during Trump's town hall meeting, Savannah Guthrie kept pushing him to, of course, there's always the, will you denounce the white supremacist without ever, once again, defining for the audience what the hell that means, so we would know who he's denouncing and what for. But there was really a push to denounce the Q thing, to denounce this conspiracy theory, the Q thing. And she even spelled this one out. She did give a definition for this. And that was that this crazy conspiracy theory that there are these this Satanist pedophile cabal that is, you know, doing, you know, basically, which I think she said basically the Democrats, which is incorrect. It's larger than that. And you know, I thought it was interesting that they made it a point to focus on the pedophilia. They're like, how dare you? So, and this gets you thinking, because you go back in time, you start thinking about, you know, the whole Pizzagate thing and how all of this ties together. And I thought we'd get into that in the context of this Hunter Biden story. Again, if there's something bigger here, they have much more information off of this computer or whatnot than what they're letting on that they do. And I can't help but feel like, you know, there's like a huge nuclear bomb getting ready to drop. I'm kind of hoping there is. It seems like there's a lot of panic. You can feel the panic in the air. And I think it goes beyond worrying that Joe Biden might lose the election. One of the things that, you know, I can be absolutely sure that, you know, like Pizzagate is real in some sense or another, for the simple fact that the media keeps running around, has been running around for years now saying it's been debunked, when it's not been debunked. There was nothing debunked about it. I mean, they have yet to explain to anybody what all of these emails about enjoying pizza, having pizza brought to them, playing dominoes on pizza. They have yet to tell anybody what the hell any of that means. And when we know, I mean, is a fact, is not a made up thing, that these words, these terms that we're using are known pedophile terms. We know this. One thing we won't be doing, we're not going to get into like accusing specific people of pedophilia. We're not going to sit here and say so-and-so, he's obviously a, you know, an evil pedophile. And he may, you know, these specific people by and large may very well be, but we don't know that. And we're not going to, I don't think anything is gained by sitting here just slinging these things out when we really don't have any actual proof that they are. But I'm sure that there's a large number of these people who have partaken in this sort of wickedness. And but why? And this is what we get to, because one of the things that, you know, when people were talking about Pizzagate and said the population, the people is by and large have a hard time accepting it, because why would they do that? Why would they be attracted to prepubescent children? Why would they do these things that these rumors say that they're doing, like torturing children and having sex with children and actually like having satanic sacrifices? And, you know, but why? Why? I mean, you know, and I think this gets down to the root of, you know, power. And most people do not grasp what power even is. Because you, as a regular working person, just a regular person like myself, you many times you think of power and you just simply think power is money. But that's not true. I mean, yes, it's true that the two often, most times, even go hand in hand. But you can have money and not have power. There is a stark difference between simply having money and having power. You know, a good example of this, I was thinking before I started the show how I wanted to lay this out. And as usual, I have no show notes. You know, they made a big thing about that Amy, what is her name, Comey Barrett or whatever, and had her hold up her notes at the hearing, and it was a blank piece of paper, and they were all like, oh my gosh, she's just doing this whole thing off the top of her head. But I do this every week with basically no notes. I mean, I have, usually when I start, I have a general idea what we're going to talk about, but there's no, like, I'm just reading a script here or anything. But I was thinking about this right before start recording, you know, what would be a good example to highlight this? And I thought a good example of this would be Mel Gibson. I mean, you look at Mel Gibson, he's a famous person, right? I'm sure by all of our standards, he's rich, he's got money, he's wealthy, he's very well off. But you look at what has been done to him, and I thought we'd cover what happened to him real quick and why it happened. Because a lot of people don't even understand, you know, don't even know why it happened. If you remember years ago, I think it was back in the 90s, maybe early 2000s, 90, right in there. He produced that Passion of the Christ movie. It was done in Latin. It was a big production. It was a big thing at the time. And it sold. It did very well. But I remember years ago reading the story behind that movie, how that movie came about. And Mel Gibson came up with this, and he wanted to do this movie. And he went around to everybody knew in Hollywood and was told immediately, you know, we're not making that Jesus movie. And he went to all studios, producer, you know, all these places. It was like, you know, pitching this movie. And he was told time and time again that there's no way we'll make that Jesus movie. And so finally he got frustrated. He's got the money and he's like, fine, I'll make the movie myself. And I remember reading that he was told specifically, if you make that Jesus movie, we'll ruin you. We'll make sure you never work here again. You know, he was told his career would be ruined if he made the Jesus movie. People wonder why we refer to this stuff as satanic. It is literally satanic. I mean, it is literally. How dare you say? How dare you call them the children of the devil? But yeah, they're actually like literally doing the devil's work here. You know, you dare to make the Jesus movie and we'll ruin your life. Well, he went on and made the Jesus movie and it did very well. I mean, churches were screening it. It was this huge thing. People were like, I don't know, having this. You know, it was such a thing. People were having this complete fit, like bawling in the theaters watching this movie because it was. It didn't give like a rated G version of the crucifixion. You know, it was brutal, and that people had to actually really feel the price, a little piece of the price of what the sacrifice was. Well, after making the movie, and the movie was a huge success, what happened? His career was ruined, and it was highlighted. There was a highlight, you know, incident where he gets pulled over for being supposedly pulled over for being drunk, or whatever. It goes on this rant about to the cop about the Jews, and you were probably the Jews sent you or something, and you know, is this very public meltdown, and nobody stopped to consider what drove him to that, what was going on behind the scenes, what was being done to him, what kind of harassment was he facing that made him go on this meltdown? Because you wouldn't just do that out of the blue for no reason. There had to be things going on, and obviously we don't know specifically what things were going on, what threats were being made, what actions were being taken against him, but we do have the context that he was told if he made the Jesus movie, if he made the Passion of the Christ movie, that his career and he would be ruined. So no doubt it's not a big leap of faith to assume that that's what happened to him. And ever since, I think he's been like cameo appearances, maybe in a couple of films. I mean, for the most part, his career, he was an A-list actor. I mean, he was a box office draw for years. And then after that, he's done at the status that he was. This is a good example of the difference between money and power. He had money. He'd make a movie himself. He didn't have to have the production companies. Hey, he's got money. I'll make the movie myself. But he didn't have the power. Those who destroyed his career, they had the power. He had money, yes, but he didn't have power. This is a good illustration. This is the best illustration I've come up with within like 2 minutes of doing the show. Of a good example of the difference between simply having money, but actually having power. This is how power works. Now, what does this have to do with circling things back to Pizzagate and this notion that these powerful people, you know, are basically satanic pedophiles, or more to the point, why would they be? Because again, as people, and if you're listening to the show, I can guarantee you, because myself, you, we don't have power. I mean, we don't, regardless of your financial stature or status, rather, we don't have power. We just have our little bit here that we have the power of the truth. We try to speak the power of the truth in Christ. But as far as this worldly power, I mean, we don't wield worldly power. So I think for a lot of people, it's very difficult to understand how power works. You know, I love old sayings. And the reason I love old sayings is because they become old sayings because they're true. Or at least they ring true. And one of those old sayings is I was jotting down, getting ready to do the show, is that absolute power corrupts absolutely. And you know, it's a simple thing. And it's utterly true. But people can't understand that because people don't understand what it is to wield power. When you look at these people that run for Congress, and they'll spend millions of dollars for a job that if they held it for 30 years and just simply drew the congressional salary, they would never make the money back up that they spend to be elected. So why? Well, of course, obviously there is a financial kickback. I mean, Nancy Pelosi's been in the House for how long? And now she's rich. She wasn't rich when she went in there, but she's rich now. So there is financial kickback, but there's more to it than that. They crave power. And I don't think the real power is in these Congress people. I mean, they're at the lower rung of wielding power. But ultimately, they just simply do what they're told. But they get in on it. You know, they're not the gang head. They're just, you know, one of the little outer fringe members. But they get to claim gang membership. So they feel power. They feel powerful. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. When we talk about things like Pizzagate, and people would sit there and they'll scratch their head and be like, why these rich and powerful people, you know, could have any women they want. Why would they be, you know, pedophiles? What is it? Why would they wind up doing these sort of things? And this phrase, this saying, absolute power corrupts absolutely, is the reason why. I thought we'd delve into the mindset of why that would be. When you think about people that can wield an immense amount of power, you know, to live in that way, you can't imagine it. I can imagine it. I can wrap my mind around the concept as an abstract concept, but I can't really like identify with what it would be like. People that wield absolute power, I mean, they have the power to have people killed. We're talking real power here. We're not just simply talking about being wealthy. We're talking about people that wield actual, real power. They have the ability to have people killed. I can imagine the orgasmic reaction when they got to see Gaddafi sodomized to death on film. They probably keep a copy of that and watch it over and over because they get off on it. Not because they're sexually aroused by the deed, but by the power. Those with absolute power live in a world you cannot imagine. They can have people killed. They can have people erased. They can have people disappeared. They can change stories with a single phone call. And everybody will think this new version is the truth. This is how absolute power works. When people live in a world of absolute power, they're going to wield it. When you have the power that you are essentially above the laws do not apply to you because you have power. See, those of us without power, we're jumping through all of these hoops and being careful how we say things and being careful because we try so hard not to run afoul or we can be accused of violating any law. You see, these people are on the other extreme of that. The laws don't apply to them. They can do what they want, literally what they want. And with that comes this desire to actually do those things. You see, one of the most taboo things you would say in our society would be pedophilia, would be raping a child. These are really uncomfortable things to talk about, but they have to be talked about. One of the most taboo things in this society would be to rape a child. Double kudos if they rape a child and murder a child in some sort of weird ritualistic sacrifice. I mean, the most jaded person in the world today would look at that and cringe at the very thought of it. And that's what they get off on. It's not that they're sexually attracted to children, like, you know, your Joe Creeper that maybe is a registered sex offender down the street that, you know, cruises the elementary school and look at those little cuties. It's not that sort of, that's not why they would do these things. That's not what they actually get off on. What they get off on is the idea of having the power that they can. They can do that and nothing. See, Joe Creeper, he's going to get his shit pushed in. I mean, you know, when he acts on those things, he's going to get his shit pushed in by the system, by the people, people catch him. I mean, he's going to face a consequence for that. These people, it's the fact that they won't. It's the fact that they can do that. They can have a child kidnapped. They can have a child kidnapped. They can rape that child. They can murder that child. And again, we're not, look, we're not naming any specific names here because we don't have any evidence of that. And we're, you know, we try to be up and up here, but we're just talking in general. Why would they do that? Why do these powerful people? Because that's how power works. That is why it's corruptible. That is why absolute power corrupts. Absolutely. Because it's not, oh, wow, they, you know, they're like Joe Creeper. They get off on little kids. No, it's not that at all. It's because they can. That is what gets them off. It's because they can do it. And no, it's the most taboo thing. If something else was more taboo, they would do that. It's because it is a taboo thing in society to the extent that you could be drug out in the street and lynched for it, probably still, maybe, I don't know. But they can. They can do it, and they can do it out, basically, for all purposes, out in the open. They can do it and film themselves doing it, and they probably do. You say, well, why would they do that? There'd be evidence of it, because they get off on the fact that, look, it's in your face. I can not only do this, I'm going to film it. And you bastards can't touch me. This is what they get off on. And this is why people don't understand. When you talk about things like Pizzagate and these pedophiles or these powerful pedophiles and stuff. And I'm sure much of it is, again, nobody's ever told us what any of these, how come they had all these emails with these pedophile code terms in them? They've never told us that. They just said, it's debunked. Just like they never tell us what white supremacist means. Trust me, they're going to get around to it one of these days. You're going to be surprised how many people fall into it. But anyway, circling things back, the reason they do it is because they can. That is what excites them. It's not the act necessarily in and of itself, like it would be for Joe Creeper down the road who cruises the elementary school. It is the fact that they can do it and you can't. The fact that they can break any rule, any society, any moral code in society because they are above those things, because they have power, they have absolute power. They can do those things. You can't do anything about it. This is why they would do such a thing. And I thought it was important to talk about, because I think a lot of people, you know, like people in general, have a hard time wrapping their minds around the very thought. And that's why it sounds kooky when people talk about this sort of stuff and they don't sit there and go, well, yeah, but those emails are creepy as hell. They get hung up in the media narrative of, well, why would they do that? It just sounds silly. If they have all this money and power, why, they could have any woman they want. Well, that's true. But there's no fun in that, because that's not taboo. You know, if homosexuality was still the cultural taboo that it once was, they would be into that, you see. But it's not now. I mean, that wouldn't be anything. So it isn't that. So they go to the next thing. It's the fact that that's what they get off on, is they're above you. They're above the culture. They don't have to subscribe to your morality. They don't have to abide by the rules that you do, because they make the rules. They live outside of those rules. And for the rest of us, it's really impossible for us to wrap our minds around that idea, around that sort of mindset. But that's the world that these people live in. We think of people in the government like politicians, you know, and people think that they are the ones who are powerful. Well, again, they're on those outer fringes. They struggle, they fight, they spend all this money to get into Congress because they want some of that power. They want a piece of the power pie. But most of them are bottom feeders. Most of them, I mean, they wield some power, yes, but they're on the bottom end. Now, some of them that are able to stay there long enough and do the bidding of the more powerful often enough, you know, they inch their way up the rungs of power, but few, if any, ever actually make it to the higher echelons of power. They, you know, because the truly powerful, they don't have to be out there in the front. That's part of the power. You know, what would be more powerful? What would make you feel more powerful? Let's do it this way. What would make you feel more powerful? To get into Congress and be out there in the front and say, we're going to pass this law that deems all white people, white supremacists and terrorists, and anybody that advocates for white people as such, and will be treated as domestic terrorists. Would that make you feel powerful? Or would it make you feel powerful to sit in your office, get up one morning, out of bed, have your morning coffee, and call up the most powerful senator or a congressperson in the country and say, hey, I'm emailing you a bill. Don't change anything on it. Put that thing forward. And they say, yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'll do it right away, sir. No questions asked. Now, which makes you feel more powerful? Everybody looking at those congresspeople, those senators, and going, oh, they're so powerful. They're venting their rage and anger at those power. And they're just messenger boys. They're just doing what they're told. They took the phone call and said, yes, sir. I'll see you to it, sir. I'll make it happen. And again, people get hung up on the money. They do it because of the lobbyists. They do it for the campaign contributions. Well, yeah, they do want to pick up their crumbs, but they do it because they do the bidding of those who wield power. It's not just about campaign contributions. If they said no, they probably wouldn't simply just get no more campaign contributions. They'd probably be lucky not to have a little accident or be found hanging themselves off of a doorknob. It's how power works. And these people and the government and these politicians, they want in on it. They want in on the power game. They want to climb those rungs of power so that they too can taste just a little taste of what it's like to have that sort of power. If you wanted to get, I would imagine that if you wanted a, if you could illustrate how real power works in this country, I would be willing to bet that if you named off five of the actually, truly most powerful people in the country, I would bet that most people would not recognize who they were. That's how power works. They don't have to be known. They just have it. They have the power. They can wield that sort of power. Now, again, as these politicians and these corrupt officials, you know, they're at the bottom end. I mean, I'm not saying they're powerless, but they work their way up on the power scale, they're not at the top, but they are on the ladder, so as to speak. And again, once they feel that they can just simply do whatever they want, you can have the leader of Libya sodomized to death on TV and sit there and laugh about it. You know, that's power when you can do these things. I don't know. Interesting times indeed. You know, I think about, you know, it's conspiracy theory. It's just conspiracy theory. Well, of course, the people who want these things that are bad for our society will sit there and say debunked conspiracy theory because they want people to not pay attention. But I think a reason a lot of the people go along with this conspiracy theory notion is because to face the fact that these things are true, that these things might even possibly true, is just too unpleasant to bear. It is the very thought of it is just too, they don't want to think it. They just want to turn away and say, there's no way that could be real. It's got to be a crazy conspiracy theory. And no matter how much you point out, well, what about this? What about that? They don't want to believe it. And I think about the fact that, you know, all the conspiracy theories over the years, you know, after 9/11, when they passed the Patriot Act, many of it, of course, I wasn't doing radio, you know, these shows or anything such as that back then. But I remember, I mean, many of us were saying at the time when they passed the Patriot Act, they're going to use this against the people. And everybody, you would tell this to people, IRL, and they would be like, no, this just get them terrorists. We'll get terrorists that blew our buildings up. And lo and behold, here we are. How many of you now feel comfortable with how the Patriot Act, now with all this talk of domestic terrorism being tossed around, and they're not being very specific. They're saying white supremacists and not telling you what that means. What does it mean? Anybody who advocates for white people, as best I can tell, because they won't give a definition, I'm going to help you out here. As close as I can come to actually putting a definition on a word, on a term that isn't meant to have a definition, it's just supposed to be a disqualified term, would be anybody who dares to advocate on behalf of white people is a white supremacist. They're tossing these terms about domestic terrorism around. Now, I mean, they have bills in the works to deem you, if you dare to say that white people have a right to exist too and to have their own countries too, you are going to be labeled white supremacist. And they got bills in the works just waiting in the wings to label you a domestic terrorist. And guess what? Everything's in place. Why? Because it went in place back then. with the Patriot Act, when everybody said, oh, poo-poo, they're not going to use that against American people. Here we are. Here we are just a few short years later, and here's where we're at. Because nobody cared back then. Everybody was whipped up in about them evil Muslims blew our buildings up. We got to go to Afghanistan or Iraq or somewhere because our buildings. Conspiracy theories. I tell you, I've seen enough conspiracy theories basically proven true over the years that I don't know how people don't catch on, but they will still sit here and go along with it. I think it's just because sometimes it's just such an unpleasant reality. They don't want to believe it's true. So it's easy to go along with the media that's sitting there chanting debunked conspiracy theory over and over again, even though nothing's been debunked. And the fact that they're claiming it has, to those who think, it actually lends these things credibility. Again, we've never been told what the emails mean. Dominoes on pizza? What is all this pizza, pasta? What is all this talk? What does any of that mean? Nobody will tell us. Look over here. Russia, Russia, Russia. Oh, debunked hoax. Oh, it's a conspiracy theory. Is this very silly? The very notion that these people are satanic pedophiles is just absolutely absurd. But in all of that, they never tell us. Well, what did they mean then? It would be simple for them to tell us, okay, well, we were using a code term for, embezzling campaign funds or something, but they won't because they can't. We do indeed live in interesting times. We look at this coronavirus thing, the COVID virus. I mean, it's observably a hoax. I mean, you cannot be sentient and functioning in life and not know that this is a hoax. These people are going around acting like there's bodies piling up in the street, and yet you don't know anybody who's actually died from this. You might know people have died that had it, but not from this. And yet they just keep going on. Oh my gosh, we got all these people, all these positive cases. And the death number's not really moving. I mean, it's absurd. But yet they just keep going on like everybody's hysterical about it. They're trying to create that reality. Everybody's hysterical about the COVID virus, but you're sitting there, the thinking person's going, but it's a hoax. But it doesn't matter. They just keep enforcing that narrative. I do think that the next 6 months to a year are going to be very interesting. I really do believe that. But with this coronavirus thing, I mean, while this has gone on and the economy's been destroyed, unemployment has been shoved through the roof, they've destroyed, this is power at work. This takes power to push this coronavirus hoax and destroy, most of the economy, destroy the middle class, destroy people's livelihoods, destroy their jobs. They have that kind of power. And all of this money has funneled, all these billionaires have gotten richer. And that's just the ones that their names are familiar. All of this money, billions, trillions of dollars, have funneled up. While you have a communist, while we're all distracted with a communist color revolution that they no doubt are funding in the streets, while you have a communist color revolution going on, claiming to be against capitalism on some level or another, by the way, while we have this distraction, while we have the distraction of our economy being destroyed in the name of the COVID virus, all this money, all this power is being even more concentrated at the fraction of a percent of the population that actually wields power in the country. And it's not talked about. Why? Because they don't want it talked about. If they don't want it talked about, it doesn't get talked about. Well, the economy's been destroyed. Middle class has been destroyed. People are facing financial uncertainty. They've kind of papered it over so that it's not an abrupt shock. But in the end, people have to come to face the reality that the good paying jobs are gone. That any hope for career advancement, all these things are gone. Small businesses are being shuttered like crazy. Unemployment through the roof. But the super wealthy are getting, they're cashing in. They're concentrating wealth. They're concentrating power at the very, very top. And they will wield it. They very much intend to wield it. I don't know what's coming. But they're concentrating even more power for a reason. Again, these stooges in the street, they're just stooges. They're, I mean, not saying that they shouldn't be taken seriously, but those are pawns. If it's, yes, they serve the powerful, most of them without even realizing it, but they serve the powerful. If the powerful decided that their pawns were better off the table, they would have them suddenly go in and be wiped out without a blink of an eye. That's how their power works. They don't have a sense of loyalty. They have power. They're at the top. The rules don't apply to them. These people, these commies in the street, serve a purpose for them now. And if it turns out to be in their purpose to dispose of them, they'll dispose of them. And it'll be, the media would go from, if the powerful decided it was in their interest to dispose of their pawns, they would be disposed of. And the media would go overnight from these peaceful protesters to these violent communist terrorists in the street that had to be taken under control. And thank goodness, because they're putting everybody in danger. You don't think it would happen because, well, right now it's not in the powerful, you know, the powerful, it's in their interest to fund and push this movement. But make no mistake, they would have no problem doing that. They don't operate in the guidelines of your morality because those things don't apply to them in their minds. Now, if I'm right, my hunch is right, and this story about, you know, there's more, being more to this story about this, what information that they have allegedly off this computer. If my hunch on that is right, this is a real pushback against power, and we'll see how that turns out. There's nothing to play with, you know. It's you go up against the powerful, you better have a dang good hand of cards, because these people don't play around. They don't play by the rules of society. And again, they're way above most of the people you think of as powerful in this world. But we'll see. We'll see how it all plays out. But I think the next 6 months to a year, for sure, probably, honestly, just between now and the first of the year, I think are going to be extremely, extremely interesting times. But just bear in mind, the things that you see, when you see chaos taking place, it's because the powerful wants that. The powerful wants that to take place. There is an end goal here. And you're more than likely not going to know. We do a good job, I think, many of us, of sitting here and thinking about these things and trying to piece what we can together and try to at least get a vague idea of where this is going. But you're never going to have all the information. And there's going to be things coming down the road that none of us can imagine. I mean, we could sit here and say, well, as the chaos builds, their plan... As this thing collapses, they want to present themselves, you know, basically a version of full communism in order to restore order. And we're behind the eight ball because there is no, we don't have power. There is no, well, we can present to the people an alternative from some form of basically total communism versus chaos. Because I've said this before, if the people are given a choice between total chaos or some form of total communism, but order, they'll wind up taking the communism. And we don't have the power. We don't have a way to present some other alternative. And the closest thing to an alternative is people are hoping someone like Trump can somehow maintain the status quo, even though the status quo is currently crumbling and shows no sign of stopping its decay. As the society comes apart, because societies and nations are like people. They have a lifespan, and this one is near its end. This one's on life support right now. If this nation, if this society was an individual person, I mean, the family would be called in because they could go at any minute. I mean, you know, there's the powerful are deciding whether or not when to pull the plug. This thing is done. And yet it's being set up in a way that the only alternative the people are going to have some form of total communism, where the super wealthy and powerful at the very top rule everything over the peasants. Everybody else is poor, depending on some little government check to buy food with. There is no alternative. The only alternative being presented is somehow they're going to keep the patient alive longer. but it's inevitable. At some point in time, the patient is going to die, whether you pull the plug or not. And that's where we are. We have no way of saying, well, you know, I've always said I thought we could, you know, the people, I thought people are capable of putting together something new. You know, just as the founding fathers attempted to do when this country was set up, you know, put some pieces together here, there, these different systems. Really, honestly, I would just put a king in, a decent king, a monarchy, rule by some common sense. This isn't that hard. But there is no alternative, and that, again, is part of the plan. There's supposed to be no alternative. The people will accept some form of total communism if the only other choice is societal chaos. They want order. People crave order. And in the end, no matter how bad the alternative may be, even if the people know it's a bad alternative, when faced with chaos, they will choose that alternative in the name of some form of order. So we got to wrap up the regular part of the show on that. Looking at the clock here, we're going to get into our Christian-specific segment. So you know what to do. Get in here, fill those pews. Going to get into this week's sermon here at the Church of the Lampshade. So as we get settled in here, I assume everybody that's still with us now is wanting to hang out for the Christian-specific segment. So let's get right on into it. And we're really just going to kind of continue along our lines of thought earlier, because we were talking earlier about how these powerful people, you know, the rules and laws of society don't apply to them. But the rebellion is a spiritual rebellion. It goes beyond that. They have a mindset that even the rules and the moral authority of God does not apply to them. There's a reason that so many people lump this all together with Satanism, you know, satanic pedophiles, because it is satanic. Though it goes beyond simply pedophilia. Pedophilia is just the way they manifest their power, the fact that they can flaunt the laws and rules, not only of society, not only the morality of society, but the natural order, the laws, the natural order that God himself has established. They place themselves even above God. The rules of God, the morality of God, the things that God has established, they don't apply to them. They are even above what God has done. Now, as a Christian believer, you can look at this and say these people are foolish. Everybody dies. I don't care how powerful you are. Everybody dies. And when you die powerless and broke. Everybody. You leave this world with exactly the same amount of power and wealth that you come into this world with, which is zero. And you can look at this as a believer and say, well, it's utter foolishness. These people are mad. Well, they are driven mad. They're driven mad with power. But they are carrying out a spiritual, you know, their role as servants of Satan, ultimately. Because some of them probably do, but I don't necessarily think these people, like, go around and, like, have devil-worshipping ceremonies or something. They may. I wouldn't put it past them. But you have to understand that serving and worshiping the devil goes beyond, like, if they set up some sort of weird goat altar or something and murder somebody on it and drink their blood. I mean, that's kind of Hollywood tier stuff. You know what I'm saying? Worshiping, serving, and following Satan is just simply in the way they live. Satan is by his nature chaotic. Satan, by his very nature, is in rebellion against the things of God, against what God has established, because he's in rebellion against God. He's at war with God. When you see people that live their lives in a manner of being at war with God, then they are a reflection. They are serving. They are literally the children of the devil because they're doing the works of their father. You, as children of Christ, should be trying to live as Christ-like as you possibly can in this limited form that we have in the temporal realm. But those that are openly, they live their life just as the devil is, just as the devil exists. These people, they live in a manner, the morality, the rules, the things that God has established in their minds don't apply to them. They are in rebellion, just as Satan is in rebellion. That is what makes them Satanist. Not having some sort of secret goat ceremony. And the media will always try to kind of, when people throw out satanic pedophile, that, oh, like they have a goat altar. Well, they may or may not. Again, these people are so out there, I wouldn't be surprised if they did. But that's not even necessary. That's just kind of a distraction. People want to get this Hollywood idea of what these things mean. They simply are in rebellion against God. If you are in rebellion against God, you are of the devil. If you're living your life in a rebellion against God, against his morality, against his laws, if you want to understand, you don't have to go to the scripture. You can, you should. But if you want to understand, you just need a Cliff's Note version of the laws of God. Look at the natural order, because God established the natural order. If you are within the natural order and you are doing things that just fall within the natural order, you're pretty lined up with God. I mean, you can get into details, but you are going to be pretty much in line with what God has established, because God set up the natural order. He created the natural order himself. You look at the natural order, obviously it was designed by somebody. It's an incredibly intelligent, complex design. Are you going to believe the natural order just happened all on its own? If you're within the realms of natural order, you're probably pretty much within the boundaries of what God has established, because God created the natural order. These people think none of that applies to them. They think they can create reality itself because of their power. They serve the cause of the devil because the devil is in rebellion against God. But where does that leave you? We've gone on for the better part of an hour about all the power these people have. But where does that leave you? God just leave you hanging out there, just doing the best you can. No kind of idea what you're supposed to do, but we do have an idea of what we should do. Let's look at Ephesians chapter 6. We're going to do verses 10 through, I think, about 17. Finally, my brethren. By the way, this is a letter from Paul. You can look at the first chapter and figure that out. But anyway, finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. We can't get sucked into feeling as though we're powerless. And it can feel that way because in the sense of worldly terms, we are in a way, we don't wield power. We were talking earlier about people don't have any idea of the kind of power that these people wield in this world. But that does not mean that you are left powerless. I mean, God, as children of the Lord, as servants of Christ, as brethren with Christ, brothers with Christ, you are not left powerless, and in the power of his might, in the power of the Lord. Put on the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. Not necessarily going to just be able to steamroll you over. May seem like it, but not. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Your battle is not necessarily with the flesh and blood. This is your tactic as a Christian believer. You go to the source. You are battling against the spiritual source. He's advising you here, don't get hung up on the flesh and blood embodiment of these things. The way you wage your war is against the spiritual, very spiritual nature of these things. What is driving these things? If you had a machine that was running and you wanted to stop this machine, but it was a very powerful machine, it was big steel monstrosity, and you kept running up and beating on this thing with a stick, you would have no success, because the thing is armored and it is powerful. You keep hitting it and all you're doing is making your arms sore, making your hands bleed. Because you're beating your head against the wall. But if you paid attention and you look, and the machine has a big cord running out the ass end of it. Big cord running out, hooked up to a power generator. And you thought, huh, well, if the power generator isn't armored, the power generator, I have the ability to go over and shut the power generator off. I can go over and beat my stick on the power generator, and I may have a lot better luck than sitting here beating it on this armored thing, which is being used against me. Your power comes in being able to wield against the source of this, what drives it. As a Christian believer, you recognize the next level. When he says that we fight against principalities, powers, the rulers of the darkness of the world, he's not talking about literally people. He's talking about the thing that drives the people. They're doing the things of Satan, and it's Satan driving it. We recognize the lies that this world is drowning in. We fight against these lies. And that's not to say you're not going to wind up dealing with the flesh and blood and versions of these things, but where your power is to go to the source. Your power is against the source. Wherefore, take unto you the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand. It's not an overnight thing. When the evil day comes, and trust me, folks, the evil day is here in your life. Every generation faces the evil day. The evil day for you, if you're alive right now, if you listen to the show, the evil day is now. Don't be waiting till next year at this time. It could be the evil day. If you haven't figured out, the evil day is here. You are in the evil day. And the warning here is to stand and then to stand. In other words, it's not going to be an overnight thing. You have to stand to the end. You may see victory at the end of it. You may die before victory comes about, but you have to stand. You have to be willing to stand to the very end of it as far as it goes for you. When your timeline in this temporal realm comes to a halt, then you're done. It's not your problem anymore. But while you are in this temporal realm, while you're traveling down this timeline that you're in, you've got to do what you can to the very end of it. Stand therefore, having your loins girt about with truth, and having on the breastplate of righteousness. The first thing mentioned here is truth. Truth gets to the heart of it's like the knife that cuts right to the quick of what Satan is doing. Everything, if you think about this, all this lie, all this narrative, it is based on lies. Whether you want to talk about coronavirus, whether you want to talk about them running about saying so-called quote-unquote white supremacists, which are never defined, are the biggest terrorist threat facing the country, whether you want to say all of this talk about just some sort of white people are the boogeyman under every blanket, whatever the case may be, they're all lies. They're all lies. You get to the heart of the matter. This is where their power. If you could make the lies disappear, they would disappear. This narrative, this entire thing would collapse. Their power is in the lies. If you took their lies away from them, their lies, L-I-E, lies. Don't want anybody to say I'm saying lies. Say, you're saying to go out and kill people. If you took their lies away from them, they have nothing. All they have are lies. Who's the father of lies? Jesus was pretty clear on it. Satan himself. All they have is Satan. All they have are lies. If you took their lies away from them, they've got nothing. All they have are lies. Truth. So what do you get? You gird yourself with truth. The breastplate of righteousness. Again, you try to be the opposite. You try to be as Christ-like as possible. And your feet shod with the preparation of the gospel of peace. When God sets something before you to do, you got to be ready to do it. Got to be ready to do it. Above all, taking the shield of faith, wherewithal ye shall be able to quench the fiery darts of the wicked. Again, faith, every time I get a chance, I remind you of this. Faith is not a feeling. It's like bravery is not a feeling. You can have somebody that's really brave and they're scared shitless, but they do what is required of them anyway. They're scared to death. You sit there, people get this idea, a brave person is somebody who isn't scared, and that's ridiculous. People that do brave acts, you look at what they do and you're like, they weren't scared. There's no way they aren't scared. What makes them brave is that in spite of the fear that they feel, they move forward and do what they have to do anyway. They rush into a bird. They do whatever heroic act is required because they're, even though in spite of the fact they're fearful, your faith is like bravery. It has nothing to do with being fearful or you know, your emotional turmoil. It is the actions you take. It is continue to move forward and do the things outlined that Jesus has told you to do despite what the enemy does. And this is a defense. When you take these actions, you can quench the fiery darts of the wicked. And take the helmet of salvation. The helmet of salvation, your salvation is secure. They cannot take that from you. They can take everything, including your life. They can take your property. They can remove you from society. They can even kill you. But just as Jesus warned, don't fear those that after you put to death can do nothing to you. Remember, you serve the one that after somebody's dead, then he can cast you into hell where there is no time. It never ends because there is no time. There's no set time. You ultimately serve the true power, which is God himself. The helmet of your salvation protects you because you know that this whole thing is temporary. And in the end, if you stand to the end, you persevere to the end, you hold to your faith to the end, you will see this through. Victory will be yours. And take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the Word of God. And once again, what is the Word of God? Most easily and simplistically wrap it up into a nice package. It is truth. God is truth. Christ is truth. So you have the sword. And I find this in a sword of the Spirit, which is the Word of God. Because the sword's not a defensive weapon. I mean, a sword is something that you wield against somebody. A sword is not something you see. That's what the shield is for. The shield is your faith. That's your defensive weapon. The helmet. This is your defensive. All these first things are things that strengthen you. They're used primarily for defense. Now, having your feet shod and prepared, that's being ready to go into the battle. Okay, your feet being shod, that's being ready with the gospel. You're ready to go into the battle, because if you don't ever enter the battle, then what are you doing? You have to be prepared to enter the battle. But all these other things, they're part of your defense. They hold you up. They put you, give you courage. But the sword is an offensive weapon. It is with which you strike the enemy with. And may your faith be strengthened, because you're sitting here and saying, whoa, what is that going to do? But we've already just read that your battle is with the source. If you can battle and fight against the source, you are going to have more success. When you battle against the source, where the energy is coming from, where the driving force is, then you are going to have more success in whacking your stick against the armored machine coming against you. You understand that these things are being driven. Ultimately, when you get down to the very source of it, it is a spiritual source. And if you are going to attack that spiritual source, you are using spiritual weapons. Now, one of little faith will sit here and say, that's not going to do anything. You've got to do something about these people. What are you going to do? I mean, that's not to say that, there are times, obviously, through history where wars are waged and independence is fought for and things such as this, but that's not you. I mean, that's not you right now where you're at. You don't need to sit around and wait for something to happen. You don't need to sit around and wait to do something. If you're a Christian believer, here it is spelled out. You have your weapons. You strike. You have your sword of truth, the gospel. You have the ability to go circumvent all of these things that are out here put out in front of you, dancing about like a sideshow in this world. You have the ability to circumvent all of that distraction and get to the source. These powers of darkness that rule this world. You can cut around all of the bullshit, as they say, and get to the source of the matter, to get to the heart of the matter, the driving force in the matter. And you either believe that driving force is Satan or you don't. You're either a Christian believer or you're not. And if you're listening to this and you're not a Christian believer and you're sitting here going, this is all a bunch of bullshit, then that's your prerogative. But if you are listening to this and you are a Christian believer, then you have to believe, you have to understand that the driving force behind all of this chaos, all of this wickedness that you see in this world is from Satan. Now, do you want to bash your head against the people that are manifesting that? Or do you want to cut through to the chase? You want to cut through the bullshit? You want to cut through the lies and get to the source and wage battle against the source that is driving all of these puppets hanging off of a string? It's your choice. And if you're not a Christian believer, you can sit here and say that's bullshit. It's just not going to do anything. That's your prerogative. I'm not talking to you. This is the Christian specific segment. I don't give a shit. You go to hell. I don't care. I don't mean to be flippant about it, but that's not what this section is for. This section is for the Christian believer. If you're a Christian believer, then you know the driving force behind this is Satan, and you have the chance with the sword of truth, with the gospel of the Lord, with the power, you're not powerless, with the power from the Lord, you are not powerless, you can get to the source of this matter. You think truth has no power? Then why do they wage so much? Why do they make so much effort to shut the truth down? Because that's what you come down to. All of these bannings, all of this, all of this silencing you, all of this unpersoning you, making you shut up, making you be ostracized from society for saying politically incorrect. Have you noticed that everything that is politically correct just always seems to happen to be true? Have you noticed that? It's not war against political incorrectness. It is a war they fight against the truth. And you are sitting there as a Christian believer and you have the power of the truth from God. And you're sitting here going, well, they ain't going to do anything. What's the use? What's the point? Well, if there's no use and no point, why in the hell do you think they're fighting so hard to shut the truth up? Your enemy shutting the truth off. People are being banned. People are being shut down. People are being fired from their jobs for speaking the truth. They say, well, just speaking the truth doesn't do anything. Well, apparently the enemy thinks it does because they're working pretty damn hard to shut it down, aren't they? I find it amazing. Look at what your enemies are doing.
But the truth is, what power are you talking about? I'm going to go out here and put my camos on and run around in the woods and play Weekend Warrior. That's getting ready.
You have a power right now.
That ain't going to do anything,
really, because apparently the enemy is a lot more worried about the truth than he is about you dressing up and playing soldier on the weekend in the woods. I'm being dismissive of things people are doing. This is the Christian specific segment. I'm talking to Christian believers. Everybody's welcome to listen. And I have a lot of non-believers listening. That's great. And who knows, if you decide maybe Christianity is not quite as cucked as you think it is, then that's great. Or if not, whatever, that's on you. But this is the Christian specific segment. And as a Christian believer, you have the ability. You are not powerless. I guess that's what we're getting down to here, is you are not powerless. You can strike to the source of this, and your power is obvious. The truth, the gospel, this is what they're trying to counter. This is what they're trying so hard to counter, to stop. Therein lies your power. You are not powerless. You have a certain amount of power. And this strikes to the heart of what you're struggling against. Not the puppets in front of you, but the source of it, the string puller, as it were. That's why the more you wield the truth, the more they will screech and holler and complain and kvetch and demand that you stop, that you be shut down, that you be silenced. Because it is ultimately the truth. The truth, because to take things back full circle, they're a reflection of the devil. The devil is in rebellion against God. And when you do the things of God, then you are countering that rebellion. There's just like it's like a theater. It's like a playing out of a reflection of the spiritual battle that is the real battle that is taking place. It is a reflection of that. You know, I mean, it's like in a real war, you might have two main armies opposing one another, but on the fringes in the towns, you'll have partisans that represent the two warring factions, and they reflect that which, you know, the army is fighting out there as well. I mean, you're part of this, and you're doing the things of God, you're opposing the things of the devil. And realistically, this is the power that you have. I mean, even, like I said, even if you want to sit here and scratch your head and say, well, it doesn't really sound like doing much. Okay, then what are your options? What do you have the power to, if you're going to be focused on the physical realm, then in this matter only, you're going to sit here and say, well, then what do you have the power to change? What do you have the power to do? I mean, how are you going to oppose all of this power of the earthly realm, these people that wield this immense amount of power? I mean, they can disappear you tomorrow. They have that kind of power. They can throw you in a prison without telling anybody. This notion that a piece of paper says they can't do that is just silly. They can disappear you. Oh, yes, that also was a part of the Patriarch, wasn't it? They can say you're a terrorist and throw you in a military prison and just disappear you without any kind of, you know, the regular civilian quote-unquote protections that you think exist don't exist, because they can hang the terrorist label on you. That was a great idea. But no, seriously, I mean, how do you think you're going to oppose this power? If you're not going to be able to circumvent it and get to the source of it, then what are your options? If you're sitting there scoffing at this notion, what are your options? You're not going to come against this sort of power. You know, again, it's like the illustration I used before. It was like running up there and hitting the armored machine with your stick. It's not going to do anything, because you don't have the ability to counter it. This reality, that is the reality. I mean, I'm not saying you don't do what you can do. You know, I mean, but your ultimate power to fight against this thing lies in the Word of God. It lies in the spiritual realm, because that is the source of this conflict. And that is the source of your power. We got to wrap up on that note. Hopefully you got something out of it this week. It's always what we shoot for. Again, do appreciate all of those of you who aren't shy and pay the tithes. It is very much appreciated. It makes a big difference for poor, lowly Lampshade. So, yeah, we're going to wrap up on that note. Again, a reminder, I go on Fridays, the Daily Nationals, send long shakes. Always a fun conversation. One of these days I'll get around to sitting around, maybe doing something extra, another extra project. Right now I've just been really, 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 really busy. So, yeah, I just don't have the time for it. It's not like I don't have other ideas and things I'd like to do. Some other shows once in a while we'd like to do. It's people say, well, why don't you? It's give me a little time. This is busy right now, very busy. But again, I appreciate you joining us this week. Hopefully you got something out of it. Hopefully we'll see you again next week for the Church of the Lampshade.